Good. Everybody can probably hear me all right, so let's get actually started. So welcome everybody. This is the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices community call, and this is the March 2016 monthly call. And this, we always know that there's new people arriving on these calls, and there's a lot of people usually arriving slightly late, so a few minutes slightly late when we start, and that's absolutely fine as well. We do have a typical agenda, like we always do within the monthly community calls. So we will have a look on the monthly highlights. So what was actually released, some other general topics around the BNP. We'll have a look on the contributions and other topics. And so what the community built together and shared them with the community. And then some brief discussion around the future plans. We always have some targets, and unfortunately some of the targets which we had for the March release will be delayed for April, which is unfortunately relatively common. Because like many of the community contributors, also we in the Microsoft side have other things on our table, so we need to every now and then prioritize our time. But that's understandable, and those things do happen. But let's have a look on the things what will be coming up in the April release. The final topic, and probably the most interesting topic, will be the demos. And I'm targeting to do a 15 to 20 minutes discussion. Just a summary on slides. There's quite a lot of slides, but I'm going to be relatively fast with those. And then we will have three different demos, one from Paul Shuffles, one from Frank Marasco, and one from Paolo Pialorsi. And sorry, Paolo, I cannot pronounce your name properly, which is fine because nobody can pronounce my name properly either. So that's absolutely fair. So let's get actually going on the material, so we get to those demos as well. Thank you, Paula. So first of all, just a reminder, kind of on the resources, there's always new people arriving on this call, so we want to make sure that people are aware of what we're actually doing. So the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices is all about building a community with the community with the internal and external people working within the SharePoint and in Office 365 development. A lot of our stuff actually originates from the SharePoint side, but now we're more and more, let's say, growing the program towards the Microsoft Graph, Office 365 APIs, and all of that non-SharePoint specific stuff as well. We actually did have, for example, Python sample included in the March release, which is kind of cool. So we are even going further down on the route of none of Microsoft technologies, and building and sharing those for the community using the BNP tooling. One comment which we always forget about is that the name is Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices, but this does also include guidance for on-premises, and we're going to talk about that one slightly later today as well. AKMSF Office Dev BNP is the quick address. We do have two public references. Blue Meteor is an awesome example of an ISV who's building a reusable modular intranet for Office 365, and they've been using the BNP guidance as their starting point, and they're still following closely on the BNP guidance. And that's a public reference in the Microsoft evidence libraries. And the Volvo Cars is another one. A customer who transformed from the Fortress code to the SharePoint adding model, and are now extremely happy about their existing implementation, and had no issues of fulfilling the business requirements using the adding model techniques. And that will be, or it should be available in the Microsoft evidence as well. A quick summary slide also on the resources. There's quite a lot of things what's happening in the BNP, so we tend to have this slide on the BNP presentations, which will have all of the links and resources available. AKMS Office Dev BNP is the one pager, which we have. It's a really long page, and there's a lot of stuff over there, but there's quite a lot of other resources available as well, like the Channel 9 for the videos, like the MSDN official guidance related on the BNP work. Yammer group is extremely successful. Twitter account is growing, and I'm trying to use that account as much as possible for the general communications as well. We do have this monthly community call. We do have a lot of GitHub repositories, which are growing, and their usage is growing surprisingly well. And then we do have the BNP Partner Bank, which is one of our really, really nice reusable solutions for Office 365, showing how you can implement typical SharePoint customizations within the Office 365 using the Adam model techniques. It's more like a starter kit for partners and customers to maybe to download and learn the concepts and then start building on top of it. Or you could use it as such as well. One thing what we wanted to remind, if you haven't seen this one, please take a few minutes after the call or even during the call to go to this address, aka MS Office Dev BNP survey, and answer the questions. It's like 10 to 15 questions, relatively fast thing to fill up, but that survey has a big meaning for our program as well. So we want to have your feedback on the existing value of the program. Is it actually giving you value or not? Because obviously we in the Microsoft won't invest on the BNP if it's not valuable for the community. And also, if it does bring you value, what should we concentrate on the future? So we used this survey. We did one survey a year ago, or slightly less than a year ago. I think it was in May. But we used this survey also to think about what we want to do within the following months and during the autumn and all of that. So please take some time and fill up the survey if you have a few minutes. There's always new people joining on this course. So quick reminder, the GitHub structure might be highly confusing. So therefore, we do have an extremely easily usable search tool for all of the samples and all of the actually guidance what we're having in the GitHub. So if you're looking, for example, a guidance around Microsoft Graph or samples around Microsoft Graph, or you're looking guidance how to do branding using the SharePoint adding model techniques, you'll go to dev.office.com, resources, patterns and practices, and there's samples/guidance link where we have a search tool. And you can just fill out the search query like branding, and you will get all of the samples and all of the guidance related on your particular topic, what you're looking for. So extremely, extremely easily usable tool. So you don't have to really go to the GitHub and start reading and finding the relevant information. This is much better and easily approachable tool for that. One thing what we started back in October last year is the weekly webcasts. We most likely will slightly reduce the schedule of this one because these are actually taking quite a lot of time to do and quite a lot of time to produce. But since the previous monthly call, there has been, well, pretty much there has been four new webcasts and weekly webcasts. And two of them are more for the SharePoint on-premises, around the SharePoint on-premises setup, the farm, how do you enable site collection provisioning with CSAM, for example, in your on-premises, discussion around why do we recommend low trust on top of the high trust, even though we do absolutely understand that if you're using a low trust in on-premises, you might consider that farm as a hybrid deployment. The high trust option might be something which we will do a webcast then in the future. But there are certain considerations if you're setting up your SharePoint 2013 or SharePoint 2016 farm for adding model development. Yesterday, we released a webcast with Patrick Rogers around the SharePoint client-side development and cross-origin resource sharing. So considerations how to go around that, which includes, from my perspective, one super exciting demo or a pattern, which is that you're embedding a JavaScript in your SharePoint running, for example, in the context of the page, not using a SharePoint adding model, not an adding. It's JavaScript which is embedded on the page. And that's then calling a web API within a Microsoft Azure in a secure way. And so how do you actually do that? And because immediately if we call a web API in Microsoft Azure or whatever provider hosted adding platform, you can actually do a lot of additional things as well, like reach out to your on-premises services or get access on additional things as well outside of the SharePoint. So really interesting recording which came out this Monday. We also released two new videos during the past month, Introduction to Outlook Notification REST API, and this is more around the Office 365 API side, but it's a super interesting sample, which was included in the February release, and that video is showing the reasoning and the guidelines and how does it actually work and what's the value out of it. And then one super popular video, which is around the SharePoint responsive UI package, which was released last Thursday, if I remember correctly, which will enable the SharePoint 2013 and SharePoint 2016 to be responsive without a custom master page, just by adding a few additional files and configuring the farm or sites using the BMP provisioning tooling. Really, really nice video done by Paolo Pialorosi, who's on the call, and Paolo is going to do a quick demo on that particular topic today as well, because this seems to have really such a high demand that we want to make sure that people are able to see that in practice. Good. Quick statistics. These are actually probably much more interesting for the PMP core team, and especially for me, because obviously in Microsoft, metrics are the ones which drive everything. And that's pretty typical within the, any Microsoft, any global company. So we need to show and collect some data, show some metrics on the growth. And the month over month statistics are looking extremely nice and pretty clear that the direction is still growing. We're seeing a growth over the unique visitors. We're seeing a growth over Yammer Group. We're seeing a growth over GitHub forks. And pull requests, and also around the NuGet download. So the direction is looking really good. If somebody is wondering what is that small drop on the biggest metrics, is that's the unique visitors during the January monthly call. And that's because there was a holiday season across the world, which is understandable, and luckily and hopefully people were spending time with their families and loved ones during that time. So that's essentially that small drop. We can see actually a similar drop a year ago, even though the drop, well, the popularity of the program wasn't as big at the time. Good. Something really big, like I already mentioned, we released this one last Thursday, and we are starting to grow this thinking more and more. So we are introducing a SharePoint patterns and practices concept. We will most likely have a dedicated CMS site, dedicated site for this one as well, so that the IT pros and administrators in on-premises can more easily approach the plan scripts and solutions and all of that, which are targeted for on-premises. And we're working with people like Bill Baer and a few other people in the product marketing for getting things moving. But last Thursday, we released a first, a bigger release, which was the responsive UI package for on-premises. And there's a nice announcement blog post in the dev.office.com, and there's a video in the attached to that blog post as well. It is showing in practice in 7 minutes what does it actually mean. And how do you actually deploy that stuff? And Paolo is going to do that today as well. But really, really seems to be something that everybody was looking for. One small note about this one. Some of the comments, obviously, in the social media and in Yammer and in whatever the locations were saying that obviously SharePoint should have this natively within a SharePoint. And I absolutely agree on that. What we wanted to do with this one is to ensure that within the SharePoint 2013 deployments, which is relatively old, already designed way back before the responsive concept was even introduced, you can still take this one into use. And also, we wanted to make sure that in SharePoint 2016, from day one, right now, already today, you can take the responsive UI into use. It might be that the responsive UIs will be introduced natively in SharePoint 2016. It might be that it will take another major version released by the feature crews before that will be natively within a SharePoint. But from a PNP, the patterns and practices group perspective, we wanted to make sure that you're able to still use this, regardless is it natively within a product or not. And we took an advantage of a work what we did for the PNP partner pack, which is doing exactly the same for SharePoint Online. So you can actually do exactly the same stuff for the SharePoint Office 365 or SharePoint Online as well. One thing what I wanted to quickly pinpoint, we are also extending our PMP core team with the additional community members. So one of the things that the PMP program is really dependent on a community work. And a lot of these people are spending their own free time during evenings and weekends for the benefit of the other people. This is not just Microsoft doing the work by itself or the people in Redmond. It's around people who work with the customers on a day-to-day basis, sharing their learnings together with the community. And we want to grow the member group, external team members in the PMP core team in the future as well. But I'm happy to announce that Waldeck Mastercards is joining the PMP core team as well, and Waldeck is going to help us significantly on the Microsoft Craft side and start leading that stuff as well. Waldeck has been already closely involved within the teamwork for quite a long time, but now he's, well, just to make sure that people are aware of the change as well. And it's great to see that the interest, and obviously we want to grow the team, the core team members team, but the core team, we don't want to grow the core team, let's say, in a too fast way, because the core team is the team who makes decisions around where do we want to go with BNP. There are other ways of contributing as well, and I'll come back on that one within the following slide. So one of the things what we also released in the February timeframe was the initial thinking around how the community can get more closely involved within the PNP, because we're quite often getting the question that I would like to help, but I don't know how. So we released a blog post and a new way of thinking on the PNP structure. We do have the PNP Yammer group, which is open for everybody. And then we really released the bi-weekly office hours, and this is something what we will have bi-weekly, actually every second Wednesday. Tomorrow is again one meeting, which is more open discussion, because these monthly calls are more us presenting for the community. But quite often community have urgent questions, so they want to ask, where can I help? I would like to contribute, but I don't know how. And that's what the bi-weekly office hours is all about. So let's have an open discussion with audio, and you can follow up on offer your help, and we can figure out where you can help the PNP team. The second thing what we released was special interest groups, and we're piloting this with a SharePoint client-side development area, and that's really targeted on the JavaScript-based development on top of the SharePoint. So there's already a specialized Yammer group for that, and there's a weekly calls for that particular team who are working together closely to build a library with the general JavaScript functions and methods which people can then easily use within their deployments. And that work is just started, and we wanted to pilot that idea with the client-side development, so that the community can in the future figure out where they want to contribute, and then they can jump on the correct special interest group so that they can easily follow up on what's meaningful for them. And that hopefully does make sense. But if you're interested on contributing, those would be the areas where you want to actually get more closely involved, and there are Yammer groups for them, and please join our bi-weekly office hours. Or you can always go to the GitHub and help us with those issues and findings and testings and all of that. We're trying to make that as open as possible. But we are slightly running out of time for assigning the tasks as well. And I'm just, the time flies when you are having fun. So quick list of things what were released in the March release. There was a nice sample from Paul Shuffles around the Microsoft Graph, the Groups Explorer. This is something that Paul already released as part of his blog post, but then we included that in the BNP guidance. And Paul is going to do a demo on that one immediately when I'm stopping, we'll stop presenting. There's a core taxonomy navigation component, so a new set of JavaScript implementation for the taxonomy-driven navigation implementation for main menu, contextual menu, breadcrumbs, and all of that. And that's really, really nice implementation as well. There's a new sample for Python, which might sound really scary, but there are people who are looking into approaching the Office 365 outside of Microsoft technologies, and we want to start collecting those samples in the PMP sample catalog as well. Tenant information portal will be demonstrated by Frank Maresco slightly later today, and then we did some updates on the provisioning UX app. In the PM, in the core component, in the provisioning engine, this wasn't a significant release, I would say, but there was a lot of polishing, there was a lot of testing done, additional testing done, and there were some contributions from the community as well. So, and on the, especially on the provisioning engine, we really want to concentrate on the quality and making sure that the things are working properly in the future. PowerShell side didn't have that much new stuff, and the new stuff came through the core and the provisioning engine as well. Good. This is the list of contributors from the external side. So the people who were active in the March or during February, which means that the stuff was released in the March timeframe. And hopefully we didn't miss anybody from the list, but these are the people who were contributing using the GitHub pull requests and helping the community by sharing their learnings and finding sample and whatever fixes for the existing solutions. And your assistance is more than appreciated, let's put it this way. That's the fundamental piece of the PNP, is that we do this together. This is not about Microsoft dictating randomly whatever the community should be doing. This is we, Microsoft, working together with the community and figuring out the right things to do. And obviously in a way that we in Microsoft also will double check whatever the submissions are which are coming in, that they are aligned and they are following up on the official guidances as well. But thank you for your contributions. There's a lot of familiar names here. There's some new names here. And let's keep on staying in touch in the future as well. On the Microsoft side, we had a typical crew and typical set of people contributing. And I just lost control. There we go, in the Skype. Whoop, one step back. Typical set of people, there's the people who work closely within the PMP crew, the Anton, Spurt, Brian, Jonathan, and so on. And then we had some additional people who are not specifically part of the PMP core team from Microsoft side who contributed during this month as well. So Diana D, unfortunately, didn't have a full name in a GitHub, so we're using the alias. Roy Harper, Simon Yacker was active again with the video and contributions, and Sven Paul as well. For the future, before I'm closing, damn, the time flies. Sorry for that. For the April release, what's in a queue? We really want to make sure that we stabilize the provisioning engine. The same applies for the core component. We want to make sure that things are stable, with there's no massive surprises. What we really want to concentrate, or the big things, what we're targeted for the April, is the core component training package. That's still in our queue. It will be 8 modules or 7 modules recorded and shared for the community by the core team. And that should be absolutely released in the April timeframe. We're also looking into consolidating and cleaning SharePoint add-ins in the PMP repository, so we can reduce the overall number of those small SharePoint add-ins which we have in the repo. Good. I'm not going to take any more time on the demo. So let's get actually started on the actual demos. We should have Paul online, which I probably need to promote.
Hello.
As a presenter. You're there. Excellent.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Give me 1 second. Oh, you are a presenter already. Oh, you are not.
Yep, Frank took care of us.
Okay, cool. So feel free to, Paul, just take over the stage, and let's have a look on Paul's Groups Explorer first, then we move on to Frank, and then Paolo on the other stuff. And sorry for talking way too much again, and taking more time from the demos than planned. But Paul, take it away.
Okay, thank you. So hello, my name is Paul Schaeflein, and this is just a simple little ASP.NET MVC app to exercise the groups. When we have some training that we have prepared through the Office Dev Group to help people understand the Graph API, and when we were doing groups, it became confusing very quickly, because when you are looking at groups, you don't just see Office 365 groups, you see all the groups in your Active Directory tenant. And so the goal of this application is just to show you what is in your tenant and let you understand which ones are unified groups and so on. So I'm going to real quickly just show you the UI that we've built, and we can talk about the code. And And so I'm going to log in with just a sample tenant that I have here, and we'll go through and inspect the groups. And you can see there are quite a few that show up. I'm showing just the name and the description, and there is a group type that shows the unified option here. Right? The other capability of this application really is just to show you what the endpoint is being exercised here. So where this is a call out to my organization slash groups to see all of the groups. I want to point out that typically we see slash me in the graph applications, but I'm not looking about my groups. I'm looking for all groups in the organization, so we're using the my organization shortcut. I provided a quick toggle here that would let just then filter for unified groups, and there has been some churn on what the query string parameter should be for filtering, and now that we've gone to the V1 endpoint, you can see here it's this lambda-like expression that we would typically do in link for C# or VB. So that's how I can get my quick look at the groups. I'm going to click on, I'm going to go back a minute here and show all the other groups here. I'm going to quick just, I go and break everything. My apologies for that. So I wanted to call up a typical group here. Well, now I've got everything all broken.
Don't worry about it. Demo gods.
Exactly. So I'm clicking on the executive groups, and you can see here this particular one is mail enabled is set to true, and security enabled is set to false. So this is and the group type is null. But by understanding these three properties, I can see that this is really just a email distribution group. It's not necessarily an Office 365 group. Conversely, this dynamic demo group in my tenant is set to be security enabled true. This is using the dynamic groups capability of Azure AD Premium, but you can see by inspecting these properties, this is a security group, the types is dynamic membership, mail enabled is false. And then lastly, if I choose one of my Office 365 unified groups, you can see that the group type is specified as unified. It's mail enabled because we can do mail for groups, and security enabled is false, so obviously not a security group. Once I have a group, you can see here the URL has got the group ID in it. And so that's how I would access that individually. And now that I have access to this group, I can go into the various components of our Office 365 group. For example, here's a bunch of conversations. One conversation is created when the group was created as well. I added a couple events to the group, so you can see they get their own little conversation thread, as well as one that would be started with two different senders in here, right? And so in this particular example, Garth sent an email to the group, and then you can see here Zarinka replied to that. So that's just an idea of how you can see the groups have their conversations. And again, these are individually addressable, but obviously the conversation thread ID gets rather large. If I go back to the group again, I'm just going to click on events real quick. You can see we have a couple of events and also a file. When you click on files in the group, it'll look familiar if you've done any work in the Graph API because it's /drive/root and children. So that's a real quick lightning fast overview of that. The relevant code, again, MVC application, just use the wizard to set up authentication, which means the startup has our typical ADAL stuff. So it's using a cookie for authentication. Here's where we tie into the OpenID Connect framework. Again, when the code comes back, it's going to use, again, this out-of-the-box ADAL repository here. So if I look at my context, I have an ADAL token cache. This allows us to store the tokens in a local DB. So obviously going to production, you'll have to make this token cache be something a little bit more persistent than the local DB. But that's, again, out of the box. When you follow the wizard, you get that. I didn't do anything fancy in there. The group controller, again, is just going through. I changed the URL. Typically, you would have a group and an ID. You can see here group and then the ID, and I don't have all the individual, I just had files here. So I switched around how you would typically do your ASP.NET routing. But at the end of the day, it works out like you'd expect. But the individual controller actions are really just setting the URL that we wish to do and make a call into the get HTTP resource. Nothing too fancy here. This is really just making a call as you'd expect. It's doing the authorization bearer token by making a call to a little simple helper application that I created. Again, nothing fancy. This is just calling into the ADAL token cache and pulling that out. This acquire token silent. So my application is not really designed to get an updated refresh token if it's expired. So that you would it would fail if you have this app open for more than an hour or so. But again, just enough to get you started with the token cache. The only other thing that's interesting, if you may have noticed, that the look and feel is using the Office UI fabric. And so a couple changes I need to make here. A Boolean field in ASP.NET is a checkbox, but the Office Graph UI for a checkbox requires, or that toggle switch, if you will, requires a little bit more HTML markup. So you can see there is a checkbox for this specific class, but then the framework or the fabric also has these spans that are required to show the labels true and false, for example. So I had to override the model to say I have a UI hint, and so here's a sample of that here for mail enabled. It's saying I want you to use the fabric bool part of the view, and so under my views and shared I have the fabric bool, and there you can see that's where that markup is. I did a similar one for a nullable. For example, the security enabled is true or false or not set. It could be an option. So rather than have not set the same as false, because I was again inspecting the properties, we just set this to be a checkbox or a select box instead of a Boolean. So again, just some overriding stuff that you can do as part of the ASP.NET MVC framework by just stressing the UI hint. So I hope I made up some of the time here. I know I talked fast. Fortunately, there's a recording here, so I can give some of the time back. But again, it's just a little simple application to let me dig around and see what's going on with the groups that are involved in my my site. And I'm certainly looking for feedback. If we want to extend this, we can certainly add more stuff to it. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. And sorry for taking too much time on the on the introductions. It's always the same thing. But we don't want to extend the call for more than 1 hour. So thank you. Thanks for this one. And a really nice, I would say that this is a nice reference implementation on accessing information in a graph. And that's what it's meant to be. But it actually has a nice UI implementation as well for a lot of the other stuff. So it's not, like you said, it's not really for production use. It's more around how do I get access on the right information. And Frank's next on queue. So Frank implemented this tenant information portal, and which is available underneath the BNP tools. And if you search for the tenant information portal in the BNP search tool, you'll find a link directly to the resources and the README files. But Frank, take it away.
Yeah, thanks. Can everyone see my screen? I was having Skype opportunities.
I think there's a 50% dark on my side. I don't know what's that. That's probably, is that your Skype? Yeah, there's a 50.
Yeah, let me try, I'll try resharing.
It, do just sharing the screen fully.
Yep, that's what I'm doing. Yeah. Let's see what happened. This is what happens when well, my app actually works, but let's see.
Yes.
So let's start off while this is going. Okay. So Paul had a great little demo. Okay. And one of the interesting things, can you see it now, Vesa?
Still loading. It's in pause. Interesting.
Paused. Really?
I can see, yeah, it says paused, that you're not actually properly sharing it. Software is so difficult. IT, this IT stuff is so difficult.
All right, hold on. So Paul's app, right, when he actually registered that application, he had to go in and register it in Azure Active Directory. And one of the things why this app is so helpful is, let's see, Brian, trying to share again, is this app will help you identify applications and service principles that are expiring in your tenant. We've seen a lot of problems and opportunities with customers where, hey, my app doesn't work after a year. So by default, you guys starting to see something?
Loading. I think Rolf got it already.
Okay, cool. All right. Sorry about the Skype opportunities. Unfortunately, I can't fix that one. So this dashboard, right, you know, it shows the service principles that are expiring, your apps that are expiring. A service principle is the underlying implementation of the application object. So when you go and register a service principle with AppRegNew, underneath the covers, that is a service principle that is stored within your Azure Active Directory. And unfortunately, we don't have the capability to view that when that is going to expire unless we use PowerShell. And yes, that's great, but we can now give the capability to provide that single view within this application. Let's show you. So right now, I'm going to search for all the applications that are within my Azure Active Directory tenant. Now, this will not show first-party apps. This will only show apps that you have within your organization or apps third-party ISV solutions. We can see that all my principles are, you know, my apps, when they are going to expire. And you also see the reply principles. Let's go into the service principles really quick.
Frank, now, can you maximize the screen? Just because we're seeing half of the other screen as well. Just even though it might actually render that slightly.
Well, it's the big one. So.
Okay. No, but if you maximize the screen, yes. So it's.
Yep.
It's
Is that better?
Much better.
Okay. So. The service principles here is this is listing every single service principle that is in your environment. It's going to return back even our first-party apps that we develop for Office 365 that's part of the service. Now, if you're in a hybrid situation with 13 or 16, when you create your certificate, that also expires unless you have monitoring within your environment of when your certs are going to expire. Let me show you. So I just wired this is my on-prem SharePoint farm. So I have a few farms here, but I have sbsites.orascohome.com. Now, that certificate also expires, and by default, I created my cert for 1 year. So on September 22nd, this is going to expire. Now, this app is also using the Graph API underneath the covers, very similar to Paul's demo. And that means this app will also expire. So if I go in here, I can see here's my tenant information portal, and I can see that it's going to expire in 2017.
That's really ironic, isn't it?
Yes. And that is all in with Azure applications. When you create your client ID and your secret, that is actually displayed in the Azure portal. However, if you are using client credentials, like this app only right here, this is actually using a certificate-based. So I uploaded the cert in the manifest, and that there's a very similar concept. And if you want to know how to do that, go check out the partner pack. Paolo does a great job with that. But here you can also see that this SSL certificate is also going to expire. So it brings both the password credentials, which is your client ID and secret, your client credentials, which is your certificate-based. So we have various dashboards here that you can see when they are going to be expiring. I don't have any apps that are going to be expiring, but I do have quite a few service principles that are going to be expiring. The last thing that I wanted to show you is that you also have the capability to export this into a CSV format. So if I go in here, it returns back all the necessary information within that's defined for these apps and service principles. So go check it out on PNP Tools. Thank you very much. And hopefully you'll love this solution and help you with all your apps that are going to be expiring, so that you can fix those apps before, renew those service principles before they expire.
And just to be kind of a clarify on a few things or reinforce the message. So it's kind of ironic that in the BNP we're releasing an application which is showing information which should be visible for administrators either in Office 365 or in Azure AD, but it isn't. And that's pretty much the reason why Frank implemented this. And this is actually based on real life requests from a few customers, right, Frank? Who were asking to have an easier way to access this information.
Yeah, and basically, this app has been used at two of our large customers, and I actually use it at home because I'm tired of executing PowerShell. So this was that gap. This filled that gap. The permissions, before we move on to Paulo, is this app is all it requires is directory read. So that's the only permissions that the app actually needs to be used in your environment.
Yeah.
So no tenant admin permissions at all is required.
Good.
And it works on an iOS device. So thank you very much.
And it even scales. Okay. So let's move to Paulo. While Paulo is taking over the screen. Just a quick note again on that one. So it's really obviously sooner or later we will show that the information in Azure AD or in Office 365 portal. So that information will be exposed natively. But for now, this is again, I would say, a nice presentation of the power of open source and this kind of community-driven programs. We have a gap. We need to address the gap. We can push a sample out, which is addressing the gap. More efficiently, and really using that portal. If you don't want to use a PowerShell to get the timeout or the expiration times of the client ID and a secret because they do expire, you can use that portal to do that as well against your tenant. And I think it's a pretty sweet implementation. It also shows how to do ASP.NET MVC with Graph and all of that stuff. So thanks, Frank, for that. And Paulo, take it away. Let's move to another one.
Yes, hello everybody.
Paulo, you actually have 18 minutes. This is pretty good. So Paul, thank you, Paul and Frank, for catching up on the schedule.
Thank you, guys. Yes, and great demos, by the way. So now, hello everybody, and welcome to this last demo about the SharePoint 2013 and 16 responsive UI that we released last week. First of all, here you can see the GitHub homepage for the sample solution. You can find it under github.com office dev PNP tools / solutions. / SharePoint.UI.responsive.
Paulo, sorry to interrupt you because we do have those few minutes, so I'm going to steal your time. Can you go to the BNP tools, the root of the BNP tools, just
of course,
show for the people what are we looking for? So this is essentially this is planned to be the location for the many of the on-premises targeted stuff and also additional tooling. So now we will start building some generalized scripts. There's already some scripts on the scripts folder. And then if you go to the solutions, underneath the solutions, we can actually find two really important, but there's three solutions right now there. There's the tenant information portal, which Frank just showed. There's the user profile MimSync, which is actually for converting the user profile synchronization thingies to the new MimSync tooling. And then there's the whatever the Paulo is just about to show there as well as a solution, just to clarify where we are and what the BNP tools are. But we are also looking into releasing a new SharePointBNP.com site, which will have then all of this more easily approachable, and people can more easily download the assets as well. Yes, sorry, Paolo. Take it away.
No worries. Totally okay. So, as I was telling you, in the SharePoint UI responsive sample solution, you will find just a few files that made up the responsive solution. In fact, we tried to keep it very simple and very easy to be applied and used. And basically, you will find only one JavaScript file and one CSS file, which will be used to embed into an already existing 2013 or 16 on-premises SharePoint site collection the responsive UI and the responsive behavior. And moreover, you will find a couple of PowerShell scripts which can be used to enable or disable the responsiveness, as well as two XML provisioning templates, because internally this sample leverages the PNP remote provisioning engine to apply the extensions to a target site collection. So, first of all, let me show you how the solution behaves, just to make it clear what we are going to see, and then I will briefly explain you how you can use it in your own environment if you want. So, let's say, and I will move to Google Chrome as a browser, because I can use the device emulator to show you the behavior of this customization with iPad, iOS, Samsung, Galaxy devices, and whatever else. Here I am in Chrome. I have a classic SharePoint 2016 release candidate setup with a site collection, which is right now with the out-of-the-box capabilities. So, for example, if I reduce the screen of my browser, the area of my browser, it does not behave properly from a responsive design perspective. And if I press F12, to show you this site using, for example, an iPhone 6 device. As you can see, we still have the out-of-the-box UI of SharePoint, and eventually we could have the mobile view or the touch UI provided by SharePoint, but we will not have any automatic resizing and refactoring of the UI based on the device that we are using. So now let's say that I want to make this site responsive. Well, from an IT pro perspective, or from a user who want to simply leverage this tool as it is out of the box, you will have to, of course, move to the proper folder in which you will have the PowerShell scripts. You will need to provide a set of credentials for authenticating against the target SharePoint environment, as well as to set up a variable with the URL of the target site. And you will simply need to use the enable responsive UI PowerShell script, providing the target URL of the site that you want to make responsive, and the credentials, of course. If you want, you can execute this script simply providing the target site, and what will happen, it will be that all the content, so the JavaScript file, the CSS file, will be uploaded into the style library of the target site, and the JavaScript file will be embedded in all of the pages of the entire site collection. So, I mean, the site collection root site, as well as all the sub-sites within the same site collection. If you rather prefer, you can also provide the URL of an infrastructural site collection so that you can copy the JS file and the CSS file into a unique and shared site collection, which will be used like a kind of a private delivery network for your tenant or for your server farm, so that you will be able to do updates on the JS and CSS file in a unique place. It is up to you. Let's, for example, use the second option. So I will set up the variables. I will provide my credentials for the target environment, which is an on-premises one, so I have to provide Windows level credentials. Okay. And I will execute the second option of the script. As you will see, the PowerShell script simply target my site collection and pretty soon will apply a couple of PNP provisioning templates onto the target. The first one is the one that is uploading into the infrastructure site collection the two files needed to provide the responsive behavior. The second template will be the one that will enable the custom action, site collection level custom action, to embed a JavaScript file, as well as it will disable the mobile view feature, which is out of the box enabled in any new theme site collection created in SharePoint. just after that, if I go back to my browser and if I refresh the UI, for example, using the iPad or sorry, the iPhone 6 UI, you will see that pretty soon the UI will follow the available size on the screen. Let me refresh it one more time to reload all these scripts. Maybe I have to resize just for a while the screen. Okay. And as you can see now, in an iPhone 6 device, I have this responsive UI. I have, for example, the document library, which has been resized and had some kind of makeup to make available only the title and just a few information about the document instead of having the full list of columns which are available in the desktop view. I can, of course, go to the hamburger menu, which is typical of any mobile and responsive user experience. I can go to the site contents, for example. There I have a resized UI for the site content page in which, for example, we have the icons to access the workflows, the site settings, and the recycle bin, which intentionally miss the description to have much more space for the really useful information in the UI. We have a vertical representation of all the available libraries and subsites, and we can do the same for the site settings, for example. So I can go here, open the site settings, and as you will see, out of the box, the site settings are based on a table, an HTML table, but we do some remake or some refactoring of the HTML, and we provide a vertical representation based on div elements of this site settings page, and so on, so forth. So, basically, we are looking at the smartphone and the iPhone iOS UI. We can, of course, consume this guy also from an iPad. So if I go to the iPad emulator, I have a different behavior because the UI now is ready for a tablet surface area. And so I have an hamburger menu on the left with a page which is slightly wider than before, so I have much more room for my information. So, for example, if I go back to the site contents, I will have a different behavior, but still responsive. And if I go to the home page of my site, again, I will have this kind of behavior. And as you can see, pretty soon, the document library rendered in this area of my screen will have much more fields than the one in the smartphone UI, because we are hiding what is not really useful in the small smartphone device, and we make it available when we are in the tablet UI. So what is it under the cover of this sample? If I go to Visual Studio Code, I can show you that we have basically one JavaScript file, as I told you. And within this JavaScript file, we simply do, let me scroll down, we simply load the jQuery JavaScript extensions, and we set up an init function based on a custom namespace that we defined. And within this init function, we will embed, using some JavaScript code, a custom CSS file, which is the one that will override the out-of-the-box behavior of SharePoint. We load some script files, and we set up a viewport tag to properly adapt the UI to the target device. Within the init method, here, we simply wait for jQuery to be available, and then we plug our custom rendering logic into the page, trying to be really kind and gentle, let me say, with the HTML provided by SharePoint, so that we do as much as we can CSS overriding instead of document object model rewriting or refactoring, and we only rewrite the HTML code of the site settings page, which is based on a table, and as I told you, we need to convert it into a set of div elements. And we also do some refactoring of the HTML code of the top, the global navigation and the current navigation in order to move them inside the hamburger menu only if we are in a mobile user experience, so in a tablet or in a smartphone. And This is almost what we do in the JavaScript file, while all the other stuff is done within the CSS file, in which, of course, we leverage the responsive capabilities of CSS, and we have some media elements, like this one, which are used to target, for example, the tablet user experience, which is between these and this width of the screen. Or we target the smartphone here, which is lower than 480 pixels. And just to make an example, I don't want to show you all the CSS stuff, but just to let you understand what we do under the cover. For example, we hide here the, should be pretty soon here, we hide the text element, here we are, in the view all site contents page. For example, as I showed you previously, we hide the text of the workflows, site settings, and recycle bin. Well, we do that simply here. When we are in the smartphone UI, we override the out-of-the-box behavior of the CSS classes provided and used by SharePoint, and we simply hide the text of those elements. And we do almost the same thing, overriding all the needed CSS classes to make it possible to adapt and make the UI responsive without, first of all, changing the master page, but simply embedding some JavaScript and CSS. And as much as we can, without rewriting the DOM of the page, but simply playing with the proper CSS overridings. As always, this project is an open source project, so feel free to submit any issue or any pull request if you want to suggest something, if you want to do something better, or if you want to improve this experience. We try to do our best. Of course, it is not a 100% solution. For example, if you use some specific web parts, it could be that the responsiveness will fail. Let us know in that case, and we will try to fix it. And it's almost done on my side as well. I think that's all. I simply need
So just two questions, because I think before you're closing up, two typical questions. Number one question, why is this for SharePoint on-premises? Why isn't this for SharePoint online? You probably want to show the SharePoint online location quickly as well.
Yes, well, from a SharePoint online perspective, we can go to the PNP partner pack. There we have an entire solution which includes also a sample, a smaller sample of responsiveness for SharePoint online. Under the site provisioning project in the template folder, you can find a responsive folder in which you can find again one CSS, one JS, and one XML provisioning template. This one is a smaller one. It is not near to 100%. It is probably a 20-30% of the solution. We simply made responsive the home page and the web part and wiki pages. But for example, we did not made responsive the settings page or the site contents page. But on the other side, if you use the new responsive UI solution, which targets on-premises, more or less it works also on the cloud, to be fair, on SharePoint Online. But again, the real target of the solution I showed you is on-premises, so I cannot guarantee you that in the near future everything will still work almost the same also in SharePoint Online, but we are pretty sure that the solution under the PMP tools will properly target SharePoint on-premises.
Yes, and anyway, we are more than willing to evolve and enhance and take contributions around these topics as well. The second question quickly, we do have 2 minutes still. Sure. Are we using Bootstrap with that implementation? That's such a typical question which is coming up all the time.
No, we are not using Bootstrap directly because the choice we made is to simply do some CSS overriding. So we decided to keep wireframe, the HTML, as much as we can, provided by SharePoint. Of course, you can also, if you want, do some document object model rewriting using JavaScript and transform the out-of-the-box pages provided by SharePoint into Bootstrap compliant pages. You can do that. It's up to you. We didn't, because we preferred to work as much as we could simply doing CSS overriding.
Yes, and absolutely, you can include Bootstrap and your existing implementation on top of the Bootstrap using the exact same technique. So using the exact same remote provisioning, using the without a custom master page to your on-premises site as well.
Absolutely. Yes, just for the sake of completeness, the provisioning template that setups the responsive template simply defines a custom action which will embed the JavaScript and will disable the feature, which is the mobile browser view feature. So nothing more than that. Pretty easy.
Yeah. Thank you, Paolo. One thing before we are closing up, I want to show one slide because I want to remind people on the ask which we had when we started the call. So the 1 hour is a really short time frame, and we always have to slightly rush on these things, unfortunately. But we'll do then longer videos on some of the demos as well and explaining the implementation. But one thing what I wanted to quickly just remind people, if you do have 5 minutes or 2 minutes actually, please go to AKMS Office Dev PMP survey and do answer that survey based on your own opinions and based on your own feedback. Your input truly matters because we are doing this together with the community. This is not a Microsoft dictating how things should be done. We want to work with you and make sure that your opinions do matter, and if we want to hear where we should be investing in the future as well. Well, investing our time in the future as well as part of the coordinating activities. But we did run out of time, so thank you everybody for joining. Thank you everybody for joining on the call, and we'll do another one. I think it's the 9th of, it's actually slightly later than that. It's on 12th of April, it's the April community call. If you have downloaded the community call invite, it has monthly recurrent calls until the early June. And then we'll do another setup for the next fiscal year, starting from July. But thank you everybody for joining. Thank you everybody for contributing. Thank you everybody for joining the community and helping the others to succeed on the implementation of the stuff. And let's stay in touch. And please do give us feedback on the stuff what we do. Thank you.